Thanks. So first, I would like to thank you know, the organizers very much for giving me this opportunity. So I have to say that this is a work that hasn't been published, and so because I'm very new to this field about holography, so it's very possible that there are a lot of things that are that look trivial for you in this field, or even if there are some problems. So please give me comments, and I will be very grateful. So so the outline is like this. So I will first talk about a simple example about a finite dimensional integral to a field theory. And then the reason why I want to do that is I want to generalize that to a class integral of this O(n) vector model. So vector O(n) theory to a functional theory. So I have been just literally using this word functional, just means infinite dimensional. So it just means it's an infinite dimensional theory. And then the third part is based on these observations, which is, I mean, so far is like a rewriting of the known results in the normalization group, then, but in a different way. Then using these, how do we have a general, more general formalism? Gauge invariant. I will explain what that means. More general formalism. So, okay. So I will start from the first part. So, well, before starting from the first part, maybe let me write down the action for this theory, because that's the motivation of going to the first part. So, so the you know this action for the vector theory you can write in way. So I want to put in the cutoff. Okay, so to understand what happened to this theory, I want to instead consider a finite dimensional where this integral is replaced by a sum of finite variables. So you have some variables. With a matrix in the Gaussian form. And this is the arbitrary potential of the F. OK, so and then the path integral, the partition function, which will be partition function if it's this theory. And you can call it the partition function for this one. It's just the integral of this action. So if I call this part S0, then it's in this form. So and to relate this to something I'm more familiar with, I can define an auxiliary Hilbert space. So there is a D variables. Oh, actually there are ND variables. So there is a N. So let's look at N equal to 1 case. So there are D xi's, and I define a single particle in the d-dimensional space. So then I think these, consider these as a wave function. So I will write in this form, and this is defined as this. So I don't normalize it, and so it will become more convenient later when we go to the field theory case. But let's just take this as definition. Okay, so I define these two states, and obviously the Z is just a bracket. Inner product between the two states, right? Okay, so it's just trivial rewriting. So why is that interesting? Because this Gaussian action has something special. So if we know that in what case we get this kind of Gaussian wave function. So if you start from a dirt function, a wave function which is a dirt function, and then you evolve. Let's say just one-dimensional. I have a delta function, and then you have a Hamiltonian, which is simple free particle. So if you do a free, if you do a imaginary time evolution, which is just a diffusion, then this will become a Gaussian, right? So exponential minus p over 2m times 1 act on the delta function will give you a Gaussian. Which is so this exponential minus p over 2. So this is the integral over integral over different p's. So delta function you expand it into equal weight superposition of different momentums, and then this act on this so this momentum operator gives you and if you go back to the real space, then it gives you something like this, right? So that simply tells me that I can think of this Gaussian kind of wave function as a starting from a delta function state and do an imaginary time evolution. So if we use that idea here, we can write this something like that, and then you integrate over the x, so you get and there is a factor which is a determinant of h, something like that. Yeah.
So in your definition, e to minus vx, this state is a function of x, or
it's... Oh, it's not. No. Sorry, I just write this symbol means it's the state correspond to this function.
Okay. So in the yeah, this x part have no meaning. Right?
Well, it just means this function.
Okay.
Well, I can erase it. It just means the whole function determines the state. Yeah. That's the way to storage your function. So basically, I'm trying to show that. So if you go to the momentum space, it's still Gaussian, right? And then I can write this as the action of an operator, H inverse PP, which looks like a evolution of a Hamiltonian, right? And I can write this as an operator acting on the delta function state. Because if I take this out as an operator, this goes back to a delta function, right? Okay, so to write this as a time evolution, in addition, I can just define some Hamiltonian. Which is, in general, is time dependent. So I call my time s because it's an imaginary time, not a real time.
Is the ddx state the same as the state x?
Yeah, actually, up to normalization. So I think there is a factor of 2 pi d over 2, something like that. So if I define this Hamiltonian,
So your unit of the state, like the P, is the same unit of the delta function. Like the delta function, the unit of delta function, like the maybe the RD, 1 over RD.
Okay, so there is some factor here. Okay, so so if I define a Hamiltonian in this way, such that this is satisfied. So this can be any function which satisfies this. And I can take any time interval so that this integral gives me back this propagator. And once I do that, then I can write this as an imaginary time evolution. But let's assume the D for different as are commuting. So we don't need to worry about this because we have all this freedom to choose this. And this thing is just a partition function of the theory without this part. So C V equals zero. Okay.
The family of matrices DS is not unique, I guess.
It's not unique. Well, you can see that I can easily reparameterize my time to get anything as long as you have this. More generically, if you don't consider them to be commute, the only requirement is this thing with the time order reproduce this this propagator. Okay, so what am I doing here? So the partition function is an overlap between two states. Let's say this is the time direction. One is two. So this schematic, this is a space direction. So the partition function is a overlap between two states. Let's say one state is like this, the other state is a Gaussian. And then I said the Gaussian is an imaginary time evolution of a delta function. So you can start from here and evolve. You will get this Gaussian. So instead of I can write the partition function as this form, z v equal to zero, this is uv, and times this overlap between their function and this imaginary time evolution, like this, right? So you see how this now this finite dimensional problem, which is like zero plus zero dimension, is mapped to a zero plus one dimensional problem, trivially. And so now this is like a single particle propagator. So I can start from an initial. So exponential, this potential gives me an initial state, and I start from the initial state and evolves to the final state and look at the overlap with delta function. So by the way, so before going to, maybe I should mention here. What's the relation to what we will do later? So basically, if you look at the time evolution of this state, so you can define that this state at time s is given by like starting. Let's call the starting point zero. Let's say zero. So if you start from at time zero and go to time s, and this is the v at time zero. So this is just, so you see what's the Schrodinger equation for this. So the imaginary time Schrodinger equation is minus h s v. So if you look at what this means for v, so h has the momentum p squared, so I have two derivatives. So if I write this back to the wave function, then it looks like dij partial x so when we go to the functional case and choose a special ds, this will become the exact rg, the Prozinsky equation at what you write down in 1984. So I will discuss that later when we go to the functional formalism, but this is the reason why this is related to the renormalization and the holography. So you, I can think of this as an imaginary time, and then the renormalization group flow is like an imaginary time evolution. And the renormalization group equation becomes a linear equation in the form of a Schrodinger, imaginary time Schrodinger equation. So before going to the functional formalism, because this is more explicit, let's look at what happens when you add an n. So far we have n equal to 1. So let's look at the n. When you have n copies of this theory, this part can have interaction between different x, and this part is just a sum of different n. So then we can do the same mapping, because this everything I do is only to the Gaussian part, not to the potential. So you will have instead of a single particle problem, you have a multi-particle problem. So the partition function for n of some v, in the same way, it will be mapped to this, and this propagator is the same, except that you have a n particle problem. So this is the same, but you have a sum over each particle. So the h is a Gaussian, that is a sum of each particle. There is no interaction between them. So you have something like this. And then, so the picture is like this. So I have a d-dimensional space where I define this auxiliary quantum mechanical problem, and there is an imaginary time. So now, when I start from this n classical variables, I map this into an n particle problem. And these n particles does not interact. But the initial state may interact between them. So it may entangle between them. So the potential which is interacting correspond to a many-body state, which is not a Dirac product, which is an entangled state between these particles. And then after that point, it's like a quantum crunch problem. And then there is no interaction. So it's an evolution of some free particles. So then you see that once we talk about n particles, and if n is large, it's very natural to go to a second quantized formula.
But if we can just very simple consider the Hubble model, so if there's no Hopping term, then it's a direct product, right? It's a local in space, it's a direct product. It's very simple.
Oh, yeah. So I mean, it's not well, here I will describe them as bosons. So I mean, it's not a free boson state, late permanent. Well, because all this treatment is done by looking at the Gaussian part and consider the Gaussian part as a evolution starting from a Dirac function, so this evolution is completely free. Well, in general, if you have some other interacting system where you know this evolution, then you can also use it. But this is the only one I know. So now I can write this into a path integral. So which means that I go to the grand canonical ensemble. So if I assume this V, this potential V has V x I 1 x I 2. If I assume this has a permutation symmetry, which is true if you have an O(n) symmetry, this is a subgroup of that. So if I assume it has permutation symmetry, then this wave function corresponds to a boson wave function. So you have n bosons. And then I can write this into a second quantized formalism. So basically, what I want to do is I want to define this. So this ratio, and I sum over n. I make something like a weighted sum over them. And then this will correspond to, on the right side, I replace this n particle states by I take a superposition of different particle numbers, so it's a coherent state. So let me write this down. So it's something like this. And this is the second quantized Hamiltonian, which is H dagger, H A. So now A is just defined in the d-dimensional space. So it's d-dimensional boson with the time-dependent Hamiltonian. And the time dependence is just some mass. The mass has time dependence. There is no other term. So, and then these are something like coherent states. So this delta function is just a zero partition of this delta function for different particle numbers. So you can write them down as like x minus a dagger, something like that. I want to multiply that factor here. So this is just to keep track. We know there is a chemical potential which will determine the boson number. So I can put it there. And then I can also put it in the action. Then this exponential minus V is more complicated in general because it's in general interacting. So I have this product and then V X A. Sum over N. So this is like the N particle part. You create N particle with this wave function. And then you take a zero position between different particle numbers. Yeah.
Sure, I was wondering about this construction which involves this D sort of like diffusion coefficient.
Oh yeah.
So is it clear if its eigenvalues are positively defined or they can be negative or zero?
So far I didn't say anything. I just said this integral gives me AT inverse. I think I want it to be positive. Yeah, I want to choose it to be positively, to be non-negative.
But is it even clear that it exists, the inverse of this H?
H inverse is the Green function of the original theory.
Okay.
So if that exists, then we always assume that exists. Yeah. So this state. So you see that this state, if the V is a free potential, so it's a sum over different A's, so there is no interaction, say when the Gaussian theory, then this is simply the coherent state. So then this exponential V will be just a coherent state, and then this is also a coherent state. So just coherent state with different coherent state functions. So now, of course, this can be written as a path integral. So if I call this thing ZG, which is like the bulk action, a bulk partition function, which is actually a propagator here. So the ZG of mu is a coherent state path integral. Well, if we take a non-interacting theory. If it's an interacting theory, you need to have integration over the initial state. Because the initial state, you can expand it in the coherent state. So let's, for simplicity, let's just take the case of free case. So for non-interacting, then I get something like that. Sorry, I forgot to write the integration in space. Okay. So it's just a path integral, imaginary time path integral for this boson field in d plus one dimension. And okay, so I can.
You assume there are canonical bosons.
Because of this time derivative, so they commute.
Canonical bosons. So your a and a are just this relation of just one.
Yeah. So well, this term determines that commutation relation. Yeah. Okay. So. I go through this part carefully because I think it's kind of the finite dimensional cases is really everything is trackable. And then so now let's just simply generalize this to the theory. So there is no much thing to do. You just replace the sum or the integral in finite dimensions x to the functional integral in the phi. Okay, so. If there are interactions, it will be something like there is an initial state, and then you kind of overlap between the initial state and this this interacting state, and integrate over alpha with some Gaussian factors here, something like that. So you will get a superposition of different boundary conditions. So now if I go to this theory, we see that we can simply just replace x I a by phi x a. So I don't want to use the momentum space because there's, you need to care about complex conjugations. I just want to really write in the real space. So the index I, which goes from 1 to d, now is the position of your field, which goes to infinity. And you have n copies of it. So then, I just do everything in the same way. I take this part, Gaussian part, and write it as a time evolution. And then finally, what I get is that the thing on the right side. So if I write it for the non-interacting case, then you will get a path integral starting from some potential determined coherent state and end with this infinite dimensional delta function. And then now this is what I call the functional theory. So this action is defined in infinite class one dimension. So the field, because that will have an integral in the d dimension, now it becomes infinite. So a star partial time plus this h. So that's HS. And then HS, so it's helpful to write it down. Select that one, this one, which generalized to infinite dimensions. So it's like unique minus 1/2 DS XY. So, and you use this Hamiltonian, and as I mentioned earlier, if you look at the Schrodinger equation like this one, then you will get dTs V, minus V is minus H. So if you take the exponential down, you see d over plus d so this is the exact renormalization group equation, and this is not yet, so I don't have any requirement previously for d, except that the integral in d gives me this Green function. But if I take a special d, which is like minus lambda d lambda, where d is my Green function, which is the inverse of the inverse of this thing. So if I take that and take this special choice where d has this cutoff lambda, and the lambda is taken to be a S-dependent cutoff, then this exactly reproduce the renormalization group equation. And of course, by definition, this is actually d over ds of the Green function. So by definition, this satisfies the condition that the integral of this gives me the Green function. So basically, it just tells you that Green function is like a propagator. And you separate that propagator into different times by energy scale. And then the renormalization group becomes an imaginary time evolution. So far it's just a rewriting of like the work Joe did in 1984. So it's not very new. But the new thing is I can write this instead of like d plus one dimensional theory, I can write this theory as a partial integral in the infinite plus one dimension. So to understand it a little better, let's look at this this picture again. So the time evolution and the initial state is determined by the boundary theory. But it's not like the ADS case where the boundary theory, the parent coupling constant in the boundary theory determines the bulk. Well, that's true, but here it's formulated in a way that the whole boundary theory action gives you the boundary condition of the bulk theory, because that becomes the initial state of the bulk theory in the infinite dimension. So there is an R infinity here, which is the boundary theory. And then so this picture tells me that, okay, if in this choice, S goes from 0 to infinity in this choice. So there is a delta function at infinity, and then I have an initial state determined by this potential minus V. So if you don't do the time evolution all the way, you look at here, like I separate the path integral into two parts. Oh, I didn't write dA. If I separate the path integral into two parts, where I have a time evolution from here to here and then from here to here, you will see that this part is completely free, just start from the delta function and evolves into a Gaussian, right? You'll see that this part is exactly the rescaled Gaussian part. And the other part is the renormalized potential energy part. So in terms of the passing, in terms of the imaginary time evolution, I can simply write, so the Z, which is a superposition of some boundary partition functions with different n, Zg mu, that thing. So, I forgot to write the mu, sorry. So, this thing is the overlap between the S node and V. And the S node, between the coherent states. And the S node has a cutoff, which is like small s equals 0. And then if I do the part, if I instead go to here, then basically what you get is the S node with some s. And then the other side is the time evolution of that coherent state to there. So this is like the renormalized potential of the initial potential, the macroscopic potential. And this side, you can see that it's actually the Gaussian part. So because you have, this is basically integrated from S to infinity of the ds delta delta phi delta delta phi. This is the evolution of this act on the delta function. Yeah.
Complicated operators to be generated.
Sorry.
So it's not just a matter of normalizing V, there would be all sorts of higher derivative terms.
But they are all in V.
And they're all in V.
Well, just like in ordinary exactly renormalization group. So V phi can be. Yeah, V phi can have any. I haven't even assumed any locality. So V phi can have any term. Yeah. Of course, I hope they are local. But I mean, but in general, this works without assuming any locality. So basically, so I'm trying to show here that if you do this instead of integration from 0 to infinity, then you just get something delta phi. Then you just get like phi x, phi y, and the green function inverse with the cutoff multiplied by this factor. So that's exactly just rescaled action. Oh, I'm going a little slow. So this is this is consistent with what I learned from a paper of Joe Sokinskirk. I guess maybe both of you are in the audience. So I want to say that this is consistent with that picture. So in this paper, they studied the relation between the holographic RG and the Wilson RG. Well, this is saying that if you go here, then integrating over the UV gives you effective action. And well, of course, you will need to integrate over the coherent states here, correspond to different boundary conditions. So okay. So before going to the third part, there are some.
Can I ask a question? I mean, what would a non-trivial fixed point look like in your picture? I mean, these Gaussians are being scaled down in a trivial way. It's going infrared, is it? I mean,
I would assume. Actually, you need to change the Hamiltonian of the bulk to get other fixed points. Although, actually, I mean, when you do RG, that's not what you do. When you do RG, you write down the same RG equation, and then truncate over some terms. And then you see that even if you use the same equation, you can get a different fixed point. But I don't think it's rigorous, because if you look at this Hamiltonian, which is just free Hamiltonian, I doubt whether you can get any other fixed point other than the Gaussian one. So I would guess that truncating the renormalization group equation corresponds to add more terms in Hamiltonian, like higher derivatives. Where is the Hamiltonian? Yeah. Like I can add some other higher derivatives in the Hamiltonian, which modifies the fixed point of it. That's what it is.
Can you control it at large n when you go to solve it? I mean, you go n model equals infinity.
You mean you mean control the corrections in the large end? Yeah, I hope so, but I haven't been able to do that. Yeah.
You can show us even the Wilson tissue fixed point, right? I mean, there's no, that would be in there.
Yeah, so.
This is still the exact RG, so if you start with the general scaling theory, and something you can see, that'll be that should be a fixed point as well.
Yeah, but you mean I don't need to do any truncation or remove higher order terms to do that?
You need truncation to calculate anything,
in large n limit, I believe, because you go back to a
truncation.
Yeah. So I think it's like I have other terms, but they should be small in the large n limit. But that's what I haven't figured out. So one more comment is in this picture, you see that the n is a particle number in the box theory. So in this way, I write the box theory as a free boson theory. And the free boson theory has a particle number, which rigorously, if I want to fix the n for the boundary theory, then I should do an integral over the mu to fix the n. So something like that, you take the mu to be imaginary, and then you integrate over it. So I want to say that in this picture, it seems very vaguely, it seems there is a reason why the large n limit looks like classical in the bulk, because it's like many bosons. And when you have many bosons, it's a boson condensate, and the boson looks like classical. So it gives you a reason why the box here looks classical. But as you see, I haven't been able to use that to really do any non-trivial calculation with the interacting case. Another thing is that there is no gauge invariance. So, I mean, everything depends on the special choice. Of course, we see that I can redefine D so that the Green function is preserved. And there is also other way of making different choices. So I can, like for example, I can rescale my fields. I do any redefinition of my fields. So, for example, one thing I can do is I can do a rescaling of the field at each time, and then just to make the D time independent. So I mean now this Hamiltonian itself is time dependent, but the time dependence is just a rescaling actually, according to here. So you can actually redefine your fields. Like originally I have this. So these are like my coordinates of the infinite plus one dimensional theory. And then I can redefine this to be something like that. So just rescale the field. And so if you do that, then basically you will see that the left side is always preserved. So instead of having this integral from the minus v to a delta function, you will have evolution just from to the fixed state. And then the action. Correspondingly, well, this is just a coordinate transformation, like a diffeomorphism in the functional space. So correspondingly, you need to change the Hamiltonian. So you see that the Hamiltonian will become something like, well, this is also just rewriting the functional RG. So it looks like, oh, sorry. Before I write down Hamiltonian, I can do one more thing. Sorry. One more thing is I can also take this part completely to the left. So this thing is written as z equal to exponential minus s zero with some evolution. So now the Hamiltonian is time independent after this rescaling. I don't have time to go to that detail, but because you redefined the energy scale, so the d will be constant all the way. And then I can also replace this by an evolution from one, starting from the action. Because I can think this this just as exponential minus s, which you think as a diagonal operator acting on one. And that's, of course, this. So I can just absorb this into the Hamiltonian. Unitary transformation, not unitary, some transformation of the Hamiltonian. And then, so I write this because this is more convenient form. So the H prime, finally, in this form, when I have a partition function, start from the action to one, S, D, H, and and the H prime has a form which is like delta over delta phi. And then so this factor is what you get by the reparametrization. And then you have another thing which is this integral over y. So something like that. Yeah. Okay. So you can easily see that this Hamiltonian act on the left actually preserves the one on the left. So this is just an evolution of the action. And so now you see that this approach gives you a free theory in the infinite plus one dimensions, but it's not unique. You can make different choices to get different infinite dimensional theory, which correspond to the same partition function. So that's the reason why I want to discuss about the more general formalism, which is also trying to make a relation to other approaches like Vasiliev theory of the free, Vasiliev theory as a dual of the free action. So before I go there, one more comment is that, well, this is, looks different from ordinarily what you have, like the dual theory of a free theory should be strongly interacting. But here we see that the dual theory, well, if we take this to be a free theory, the dual theory is just a free boson with the initial state determined by the state. So, but that's not a contradictory, because here, remember, so in the last in this formalism, then the boundary condition is determined by the exponential minus s, which determines the coherent state in the infinite dimensions. So then, so basically, you can think of the bulk field as exponential minus s, which is renormalized, something like that. So if you look at if you view this as your field rather than the exponential of it, then the theory will be strongly interacting. So basically, the reason why the theory is free is you take a, you can think of this theory as you take an infinite dimension, strongly interacting theory, and you take an exponential of the field, and dramatically this becomes a free theory, basically. Okay, so now let's see how can we go to more general formalism. So basically, the idea is that I have a boundary theory. And so now let's keep it completely general, some action. And then I do an RG. And what is an RG? So in most general sense, renormalization group just means I have a way to change the S, preserving the Z. Well, of course, you have other ways to do that, like I just trivially do a translation of my theory, or I do a rotation, or whatever, retirement transition of my field. But a renormalization group is one special way to do that, which is a little bit more non-trivial than reparametering your field, or do a global symmetry operation. But most generally, we can think about these kind of operations to the action, which preserves the partition function. So, to do that, I want to arbitrarily define something like that. So just factorize this into two parts in whatever way you want, and then this looks like a inner product between the two. So then I can define arbitrary. So if you think of this as a vector with an infinite dimension, then you can insert anything in between of them. So you have formally, if I write this way, then I can insert U inverse U with any U, which is like a general linear transformation, which is non-singular. So of course this is identity. But then if I write this in the matrix form, when you write out this phi as its coordinates, then this looks like V equal to integrated phi. So J phi and the U inverse phi phi prime U alpha phi double prime alpha phi double prime, right? So I'm just writing that in the components. Right, and then, of course, you need to integrate over this phi and phi double prime. If you first integrate over the phi and phi double prime and keep the phi prime, then I can define this to be my j cubed, let's say phi prime, and alpha cubed phi prime. Right? So I'm just changing the order of integral. So this is a general rotation to j. So you see that I can do any of these kind of rotations preserving the partition function, which is just like a vector, I rotate the two and preserving the inner product. So now, to generalize this formalism to relate to something we are more something some of you are more familiar with. like the ADS space, which I'm not familiar with. But to relate this way, because this theory is like infinite plus one dimensional, so there is one direction which is different from other directions, and it doesn't look covariant. So now we can instead introduce more than one parameters, because I have shown that the general thing you do is you just do this general rotation to this vector, and I can do that in a more higher dimensional space. So I can define any manifold M, and let me call the points in M A. So for each point, I can define this U A. For each point, I can define a U, which is a component in the GL. And you need to remember that the infinite here means the infinite means the dimension of the field space. So it's so then for any U, so I can define such a map. So everywhere there is a U. So if you start from a reference point, say zero, then say here is my physical theory. I have a day and alpha, which determines the partition function. So that's my physical theory. And then I can, of course, so if I have a U, zero is identity, the function here. Then this will rotate my action. So let me draw these two arrows, which means the J and the alpha. It's like a vector in infinite dimensional space. And then the U just rotates them so that the inner product is preserved. So it rotates into the whole space. Right? So if I define that way, which means alpha is U times alpha in A. So this is my definition of the action, which is transformed into different forms. And J is like U inverse. And this is the original point. So this is just saying that I define my field to be transformed by this by a trivial group action. So of course, by definition, if you calculate the partition function, which is the inner product everywhere, it's the same. Everywhere on the manifold, it's the same. So I can write this construction, which looks trivial in a little more non-trivial way, which is you write it in a differential form. So I look at what's the derivative of alpha. So of course you will find that it's covariantly constant. So the right side will give you a flat connection. So you will get something like partial I plus WI alpha. And then similar to J, but J carries opposite charge basically in the rotation. So what is W? So W is just U DU inverse, I think. So you think of this as a matrix, which is infinite dimensional. So you define W is a flat connection. So instead of writing down this explicitly, I can write the third equation, which says it's flat. So I can write okay, so this is all just rewriting. So I'm trying to follow something people did in the Vasilio theory case. So you can rewrite this kind of transformation of your action into a gauge theory like this. So if you look at this form, it looks like a gauge field, GL and R gauge field, and equal to infinity, coupled to two Higgs fields. And the two Higgs carries opposite carries the fundamental and the conjugate fundamental representation. So then the inner product is preserved. So And then the third equation says the gauge curvature is zero. So from a point of view of a condensed matter physicist, I would say that there is a simple analogy, which is just say you consider a superconductor, two superconductors which sit on top of each other. For example, just a superconductor with two Fermi surfaces, and then I have two other parameters, right? There are two other parameters, each of them is a Higgs field. So I have an other parameter like this and a lot of parameters like that. So then the first two equations tells me are like London equations. So it tells me that this is not gauge invariant, this is not gauge invariant, so they are both covariantly constant, and there is no gauge curvature in superconductor. And then, but the relative phase between them, theta 1 minus theta 2, is gauge invariant, because they both carry the same charge. And that's like what we call the partition function of the boundary. So basically, I want to say that in this general picture, it's like at this point, so if I fix the boundary condition of theta 1 and theta 2, and for some reason, I don't know how to calculate the subtraction of the two. I don't know how to calculate theta 1 minus theta 2. Then I deform them and to somewhere, and hopefully that simplify the calculation so that I know how to do the sum. So that's basically what this theory does. So then you see that for a general boundary theory, which actually in this case starts from a point, I can map it to a formal gauge theory in some dimensions, and that dimension is also arbitrary. May I have another 5 minutes or 10 minutes? Is there any? Okay. So because I want to go back from here, I mean, this is kind of too general. So to see how the like the things like ADS space appears, we can go back and take some special choices. So basically, the different solutions of the flat connection and the different choice of the manifold correspond to different vacuums, so the different vacuums in the gravity theory. So you can think of this as a more general form of a gravity theory, because I didn't use any background, right? This is background independent. So to see a special example, let's go back here. So what's the relation between that theory and this theory? So well, in the level of equations, we can simply write, so for the Gaussian case, in the formalism there, we can simply write J is a constant 1, and alpha is my action. And then this equation, so W, so now in the original case, we only introduced one parameter, right? So it's like a one-dimensional construction. And now in this formula, I want to think of this phi as like an internal space. So it's like a fiber. So this is a fiber on the manifold M. So the whole field space of the boundary is a fiber on the manifold M, and this is a vector, and this is a connection. So then, what happened in that theory is I only have one direction, S, and then the W is just given by that Hamiltonian, which is like delta over delta phi times something. So something like that. Okay, so we can introduce other parameters. So here I'm following the same idea as this paper of Michael Douglas et al. So they did something similar. You can introduce other directions. So this, we know this is obviously the direction, what you call the longitudinal direction in ADS space. But I can introduce other directions. What I need to do is just introduce some other the connections to other directions. How do I translate? How do I move from here to here? And that you can simply do by translation. So I can just introduce. So for D-dimensional theory, I can introduce D other directions in the parameter space. And then the corresponding W mu is just integral something like that. So this you will see that this acts on the field generates translation in the sense that this equation acts on this equal to zero. This equation simply tells you that alpha phi. So remember phi is a functional. So alpha phi x at point A in the parameter space is just alpha in the original point of x minus A. So in it may be helpful to draw a picture. So say this is the longitudinal direction. So I have a longitudinal direction S, and this is my d-dimensional parameter space. The parameter space, not the real space-time. So at every point of the parameter space, I have this fiber where the action of the boundary is defined as a field. So at different points on the boundary, it's simply related by a translation. So say I have a field here, and here is just a translated. So these equations are trivial. And the non-trivial one is you go to the longitudinal direction. So and then once you write these down, you see that, OK, so this and this correspond to a special choice of of the connection. And they have something to do with ADS space, because this is like the translation operator, and this is the dilatation operator. So if you calculate commutation between them, it's the same as the isomorphism of the ADS space. So if you define some rescaling factors in, so a divide by the Z, where Z is a so let me just redefine here. So Z is exponential S, the Z direction. So if I redefine that and also divide by Z here, say there's the one over Z. So this is just a redefinition. If I define in that way, you can check that the flat, the connection is flat. Let me see. So actually, no. So this is what you do in RG. So it's like this parameter space is like a translation and renormalization, and the renormalization. So this tells me that the renormalization itself is scale invariant, but your action doesn't have to be. But if you start from the action exponential as zero is a fixed point, so it gives you a constant solution. Yeah. So the vacuum solution. So ADS. Vacuum solution correspond to these W's there, I equal to 1 to 0, 1 to D, and alpha is a constant, which is S naught there, and then I use the scale invariant here, so and then J is 0, or J is 1, so this is the vacuum solution, and then you can add a little bit here to go go away from the solution and go to other solutions which still preserve the W. So so we see how ADS space can appear. So then if you expand around there, then it looks like some theory in the fluctuation in the background of ADS. You can also choose other, you can also make other choices. And it's interesting to notice that. So this term, the reason why all these commutation relations work out is only because of the first term, which is the dilatation. this part is simply rescaled field, doesn't do any non-trivial RG, right? and it has non-trivial computation relation with the translation. And the second part is two derivatives, and it doesn't have any non-trivial computation relation with that, because that's a translation operator, and this is translation invariant. Right? This is not translation invariant, but this is translation invariant. So you see what's the general structure of these series. So if I only have the first term, the algebra works out, but it's a trivial rescaling of your theory. You don't do anything. But adding the second term gives you a non-trivial RG flow procedure. So one solution of this theory corresponds to one special way to do RG, basically. So I can add other terms which are also translation invariant, delta, 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 something like that. And as long as that's translation invariant, it doesn't change this algebra. So it's still a flat solution, but that will correspond to a different RG flow, which has a different fixed point. So that's the general relation between different solutions of this theory and a different way to do RG. You put in different diagrams. So since I ran out of time, I won't go to the detail of this theory when I reduce this back to the Gaussian theory. But I want to make some general comments. So you see that the general form of this and this is that they are some superpositions of these operators, phi delta over delta phi, phi phi. Well, this doesn't appear, but I can make it more general. So this, and one. So the W's for the Gaussian theory are restricted to these special generators. So that actually that choice is made because these are the only part of this big group GL infinite R. This is the only part of the group which preserves the Gaussian form of the action. So if you have a Gaussian action on the boundary and choose the W solution which has this form, then it will be Gaussian everywhere. But you can also choose other forms like that, which will renormalize my free theory to an interacting theory. But this is the only thing which preserves the Gaussian part. And this generates a much smaller group, which I think is, if I didn't make a mistake, is R cross SP. Where SP, let me write NR, and SP is the non-compact, the symplectic group. Which preserves the rotations, which preserves the symplectic metric. But the n is also infinity, but it's a different infinity as that one. So the n is just the infinity of the number of points in the d-dimensional space. So something like that. I want to call that infinity f, which is a higher order than this one. So now actually you can represent this theory by in a matrix form. I don't need to write this functional derivatives anymore, because it's simply some linear superposition of these operators. So in general, I can write like Wi is like some form like this. And this is some matrix which I call Vi. And the matrix contains some components which are like, each of them is like a green function. So it has the same dimension as a green function, which is like A minus A transpose D, some matrices. And this, so everything has an index I. So in this way, I can write this flat connection condition in terms of a matrix multiplication. So you can remove this functional space, which is a very large auxiliary space. You can remove that and replace it by a smaller, although still infinite dimensional space, which is the RD. So in that way, so the reason why I want to say this is I think this is related to the Vasiliev theory. So in Vasiliev theory, you define this auxiliary space, which is a little larger than the RD, but I think it's related to this. And then the star product is used in Vasiliev theory, which I think corresponds to the matrix multiplication in this theory. So you can write these equations by getting rid of these generators and use these matrices instead. So that's basically the thing. So this part is remains an open question. I haven't been able to prove that this is the same as the Vasilev theory. And also, it shouldn't be exactly the same. It should be a little more general, because I can use this V in other forms. It doesn't have to be around ADS space. So it can be around more general space. And also, this approach introduced the cutoff function explicitly, which I maybe is implicit in the Vasilev theory. I sometimes can't find it in that theory. So, and apparently another open question is, in this more general formalism, I write this everything in an equation. I don't have an action like what I have before. So that's another open question. I think I will stop here. Thanks.
Given that you mentioned the Douglas paper and the star product, so I remember in that paper, the one by Douglas, they had a problem in trying to identify the star product of the Vasilev theory. So what is different here? Like, it didn't quite work.
Well, I thought they have a definition.
But it was kind of not natural. They had to tweak some part of the field theory of their free field theories, and it wasn't sort of very well justified why they made those choices.
Yeah, so
it wasn't quite perfect then.
Yeah, that's why I also didn't figure out how to relate this to the Vasilev theory. Because here naturally, what I have is these matrices, which are matrices, infinite matrices, but the coordinates are like x and y in the d-dimensional space. But to relate to Vasilev theory, you need another two indices, so d plus two dimensional auxiliary space. But that part, I guess that's what you said. So they have a special definition in their paper, and so I haven't found a natural way to get these two indices.
And that auxiliary space is also from, is that fermionic variables that you're talking about, or not?
No.
Okay.
I think I should compare this to not the spinner formalism, but the vector formalism of the Vasilev theory,
okay,
which applies for general dimension. So this is for general dimension. Okay. Yeah.
So I guess one of the subtleties that we talked about earlier in this program with the whole graph of RG is that it can get complicated by there being additional places in the book where you see different physics that don't have to correspond to, I think, what you're calling there. And for sort of simple reasons, if you have the full picture of the gravity side.
Sorry, what do you mean by?
One example is, you know, people talk about examples for angles, they're just scalar fields, they can take vacuum expectation value. When they do that, sticks in gravity description, some domain wall in that bowl. Mm-hmm. So there's an extra RG, an extra infrared region from random Z. Mm-hmm. So it's not from random Z at all. And this can kind of go both ways. Another point that people, at least I get confused about, is the fact that the art that there's not a uniform relationship between Z and energy scale, actually.
That's why
I want that to act on every you know, degree of freedom of the system, but in gravity language, you know, the proper energy of spring is different from the proper energy of the quantum mode. And so that just cutting it off on Z is not applying a uniform energy cutoff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why.
That would be fine. It's maybe a different kind of RG. But anyway, what I'm trying to ask is, does this shed light on those confusions?
Yeah, because I mean, in the previous, first part I discussed about, then the Z is like an energy scale, so it's a special choice. But the reason why I want to go to this general formalism is then I can allow any dimorphism. I mean, because now I can. This is just
higher dimensional story, so you can sort of bifurcate your infrared regions. That would be very nice.
I mean this is a special choice where in this choice I can say this corresponds, the Z direction corresponds to the energy of the boundary theory, But this is just one vacuum solution. And even if I keep the same solution, I can do this very general gauge transformation to it. So and I think that corresponds to what you said, because I can do the gauge transformation without preserving the translation symmetry of the boundary, for example. Then I can, it's like having a cutoff which is which depends on the location. That's one example that you can change the what it means for the parameter.
So the gauge symmetry corresponds to basically field redefinitions that you evolve in scale. Is that, I mean,
yes.
Even in the sort of ordinary ORG framework, I could have two flows which differ by field redefinition, but they're really the same physical flow. Is that what you're talking about?
I think that is the invariant subgroup. So in this way, I write down this gauge transformation GL include even the non-trivial RG. Even the non-trivial renormalization is considered as a gauge, as a rotation in the U. So what is you call the field redefinition, which is like if the two RG are just different by field redefinition, then they are the same. I think they are like the invariant subgroup of that GL, which is preserved by these two Higgs fields. So that's the residual gauge symmetry in this Higgs space. Related to your question, I forgot to mention that in this case, when I reduce to the free theory, to the Gaussian theory, then I can write down explicitly what is this invariant subgroup, which is something like R to the N. Let me derive that with L and R, where N is this infinity, which just means, so these are the transformations which preserve a given function, like 1. And I can say that the different Gaussian theories are the coset of this SP, R cross SP to this. Yeah, sorry.
Any other question?
So in your Archie scheme, can you consider some like very interesting interacting boson spin system, like this simple example toric code, which has a topological order? So
as the boundary theory.
As a boundary theory, yes.
In principle, I mean, I can write it down in this way because this doesn't require any boundary theory, but I haven't figured out any non-trivial example.
But I think in toric code phase, even you do this like imagine time RG flow, it's still not connected to some trivial decoupled state.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it will be like, I think it sounds related to what something they did.
Oh, but that's different. That's whole thing is gapless, so it's not a topological order. But
this is also gapless. I mean, I can't say it's gapless. At least if you look at the previous formalism with infinite plus one dimensions, then it's a free boson, so it is gapless.
You mean you can only describe a gapless theory, cannot?
No. The boundary theory can be anything.
Just in this very simple example, if we assume on the boundary just toric code, so what can we have in the box?
I don't know. So that's I mean, these kind of natural theories, that's the open direction.
Yeah, we are over time, so let's thank Joe.